Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Comedian Jackie Cation has been making people laugh for more than 35 years. Her albums have hit number one on Amazon and iTunes, and they've garnered more than 10 million listens on Spotify and Pandora. Jackie's latest special and companion album is titled Staycation. She is in fine form talking about a range of topics, including the rapture, ghosts, and her father, Elliot. Jackie now lives in LA, but she was born and raised in South Milwaukee and was the youngest of six kids. So it comes as no surprise that she took her own creative approach when it came time to make her stand-up debut as a heckler.
I went to University of Wisconsin, Madison, in the early 80s, and I had never seen stand-up before and clearly had never been out in public before, because during the show, I started heckling the comic, and there is genuinely nothing worse than a woman heckler, even if you are a woman comic, because for some reason, the audience is always on their side. And so everyone was on my side, and I was eventually yelled at by management, and literally the guy said, "Open mic is on Sundays. You have to shut up." And I came back 3 weeks later and did open mic.
Yeah, and it was Sam Kinison that you heckled, right?
Right, because the club was owned by his brother, Bill Kinison. And Sam Kinison, of course, famously known for being super obnoxious, could not shut me up.
Do you remember what you heckled him about?
Yeah, it was just as lame as everyone's heckling. He had said that he was from Peoria, Illinois, and his timing was slightly off, and I was monumentally inebriated. And during that pause, I yelled, "I'm sorry." And then that got a pretty big laugh, just because my timing was better than his that very evening. Yeah. And then he tried to essentially mop up the floor with me, and then it didn't work because I wouldn't shut up anyway. And and so he just kept yelling at me, and I just kept talking back. And so management had to approach me like three times.
Yeah, as you mentioned, though, obviously there were no grudges held by Sam Kinison, or at least not by his brother, Bill, because he invited you back to do comedy five nights a week, right? 3 weeks
right,
later.
Right. One of the great things about stand-up comedy is how they're willing in the very beginning to let and always let everyone try. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter who you are or how big of a mess you are. You can do open mic. Everyone yeah. can sign up.
Since you started out as a heckler, do you think that gives you kind of an advantage in terms of shutting up hecklers?
No. No, it sadly does not. It gives me no advantage, and it also is a bit of, and I've been doing stand-up since 1984, right? But I'm still slightly self-conscious when there is a heckler, where I'm just like, oh, well, this poor bastard doesn't know better. And much like myself, when I was a goofy dum-dum and just yelling stuff, so I have too much sympathy for them half of the time and too much rage the other half of the time. Mm. So I'm not actually very good with hecklers. I'm okay, but my favorite clubs kick them out for me, like police the room.
Mm-hmm. Your special and album are called Staycation, and it's great. It's very funny and very fast-paced, and thank you for doing it. I especially enjoyed your jokes about your least favorite people. Who are your least favorite people?
My least favorite people are the End Times Rapture people.
But here's the thing. They want it to be the End Times. There are people who wish it to be the End Times right now because they want to get to the Rapture. Here's the twist. They've decided that they're going to be horrible people to speed up the end times to get to the rapture. Let's unpack. First of all, not the end times. Just terrible times. Try to help somebody. Second thing, the rapture. I don't know if you know anything about the rapture. They're not taking horrible people. Third thing you may not know about the rapture, not real, not real. Literally a parable to get you to not be a horrible person.
It's just sort of a circle of wow, you aren't good at this at all. What yeah. is happening? And how about you don't be a horrible person and realize it isn't the end times, it's just crummy times, and you just try to help somebody in front of you, and then you can live your best Christian life.
You've been doing stand-up for more than 35 years. How do you think your comedic voice has evolved over the years?
When I first started doing stand-up, I talked about the same things I talk about now. I mean, I talk about the same thing that the same four things every comic talks about, which is sort of socio-political things on television, in the news, in interactions with humanity, my family life, and that's it. Like the future, the past, like the same four topics are discussed by absolutely every comic that gets on stage. And you have to make sure that you make it your own. And that's what's grown. You know, eventually you run out of material. So you have to kind of be vulnerable and really do a deep dive into whatever you're talking about, right?
How do you think stand-up comedy in general, not just like not your comedic voice, but stand-up comedy, the industry, how do you think it has changed over the past 35 years?
You know, when I first started, it was 84. There was this beginning of this observational kind of stand-up, you know, with sort of a pre-Seinfeld, but, you know, Leno and Letterman and all those guys with the setup punch. And there was a lot of that kind of stuff. And then in the late 90s, there was this advent of something called alternative comedy, which someone asked me to define it one time and in 1999. And I lucked out because my stand-up has always been an alternative by my definition. Because what I think of as alternative comedy is you tell the story of how you came up with the joke, and then you tell the punchline. Mm. And that has always been, I tell the story regarding the funny thing that I'm about to do the punchline for.
Can you give me an example? Like in the Cation special, do you do that?
Well, there's so much stuff in the Staycation, because like all of that stuff about my dad is essentially just stories about my dad, with punchlines peppered throughout it of my observations and his observations and society's observations. Those are the punchlines, right? Like the story of him helping that guy with his hospital bill. So that is just a story of him helping a guy with his hospital bill.
So it's 5 to 5 on a Thursday, and my dad is like, starts in with the surgeon. He's like, yeah, you're never going to see this money. Look at this guy. He can barely sit up. He just had surgery. And the surgeon's like, but I did the surgery. He's like, you're triple dipping. You're never going to see this money. Surgeon lasted almost an hour 15. Finally said, give me $200. Get the heck out of my office. So they write the check. And they're driving home. And my dad goes, so we're driving home. And I say to the old guy, let's stop at McDonald's and get a senior coffee. You could buy me a senior coffee. Get this, guy would not buy me a senior coffee. 59-cent senior coffee, guy wouldn't do it. And I was like, Dad, why would that guy want to spend another heartbeat with you? You just spent 5 hours telling anyone who would listen that he was a dead person. He's like, yeah, but I just saved him like 30 grand. And I was like, did you do it for the coffee? And he's like, yeah.
Your dad, Elliot, some of your funniest material in Cation is about him. Can you tell us a bit more about Elliot?
Well, Elliot Cation, he's my dad, and he's been in every album, right? Mm-hmm. So since the beginning, my timing comes from my dad, and my sense of humor comes from my stepmother. And the way that my father looks at life, you know, when you grow up, you think that everything's normal. You think this is how everybody lives. And then you turn 18, you get a job, you go to school, you know, you go to college, you move away, and you meet other people with other parents and other families. And you really see from a different perspective of what might look different or odd or weird about your family. And so when that happened, I had just started doing stand-up comedy, and I learned that a lot of the lessons that my dad taught. So all of my, even my earliest stand-up comedy was about how my parents were different than other people's parents. But then people come up and go, my parents are like that too. And so there's, you know, there's commonality, but there's also the twist. Like one of my earliest jokes about my parents is how much I wanted a dog. Like my parents are very funny people. They aren't nice people. They're very funny people. I always wanted the dog. My parents hate animals. By the time I was 9, I wanted to be blind so that I could have a dog. And I made the mistake of telling my parents that, and they burst out laughing and said, well, we still wouldn't get you a dog. We'd get you a stick. You could name the stick. The thing is so that's them being weird from a parental and my father's sales technique.
So the last time I was home, I had dinner with my dad, and then I had breakfast with my dad. And at breakfast, I said, you hit a Maria Bamford using some weird skill. What was it? He was like, it's a sales technique, Jackie. It's called the post-close warm-up. I've been trying to teach all you kids how to do it since you were born. Is anyone listening to me? He said, I hit on the waitress. We went out to dinner last night. We hit on the waitress last night using the post-close warm-up. You were there. And I was like, I remember you hitting on the waitress, Dad. I also remember it not being successful. And he goes, it's not always going to be successful. It's a waitress. That is a hostage situation. She keeps going away. You can't build any kind of momentum. But you got to practice on someone.
And so, like, in the last album, I think it was, I did a joke about how my father was a lot like radiation. We never saw him, but he affected all of our lives. And so, and he's super smart and he's very funny, but his perspective, it doesn't feel written, right? It doesn't feel classical. He doesn't feel like, you know, Mr. Cleaver, or he, you know, he's somewhere between, you know, the Godfather and Mr. Cleaver, right? So
yeah,
the choices, he's very human. And part of my material is sort of accepting that humanity, while also when he makes bad life choices, I can recognize them as such and not repeat them.
Mm. I read a recent interview in which you said that today's comedy fans re-listen to comedy. Can you talk about that? Why do you think they do that?
That's so, it's fascinating to me because, you know, back in the 70s, and to this day, you know, I have heard Jay Leno say that he doesn't have albums because he doesn't want to burn the material. But I don't think that that is as much an issue as it was back in the day. And the fact, it may stem, what do you think of this theory? And this is exactly what it is. It's a theory. The idea is that, you know, when VCRs were invented and children started rewatching movies, and you would just replay Aladdin 1,000 times. I remember I used to do childcare and I was like, why are we watching Homeward Bound again? And my 4-year-old niece would be like, because I love it. And you're like, okay. So to some extent, it's kind of soothing. You know where it's going. It's like I reread books.
Yeah.
And I reread books because I know how they'll end. I like the language. I like the characters. So I think with stand-up, maybe it's the same thing. Maybe people are like, I know how this joke is going to go. I love how it goes. I like listening to this person tell that joke. So maybe it's a little bit like that, the rewatching of movies. Prior to VCRs, we only really got that with music.
You host two podcasts. One of them is the Jackie and Laurie Show. You co-host it with former Beta guest, fellow comedian Laurie Kilmartin, and you occasionally talk about harassment and the poor treatment of women comedians. Have things gotten any better since the Me Too movement kicked off?
There's been great strides made in equality and injustice and all of these things. But because of those strides, the people who don't want those advances, right? The white supremacists and the misogynists and the people who want to control women and who fear homosexuality or whatever, they have become much more vocal and more in your face, right? There used to be a shame factor if you hated people. And now the hate, there's a lot less people that hate, but the people who do hate are much more vocal. And then the rest of us who sort of benefit passively from the system that's been in effect. In the United States, for example, the advantage of being a white person is not as overt as the things that don't happen to me. It's not like people are handing me 20s under the table for being a white woman, but I don't have to deal with a lot of things that black women have to deal with, or that black people in general have to deal with. So in the Me Too situation, I would say that it's making a lot of more decent people aware of their own advantages, but it's also making the bad guys go doubling down on it.
Mm. Yes, very well said. Thank you. Have you ever given any thought to just riffing off of the title of your new album and special, Staycation? Have you ever given any thought to Jackie Cation Vacations, where you travel the world with people on cruise ships and foreign countries, exotic climbs?
Ooh.
But I mean, we'd have to wait till COVID's over.
No, but I want that to be like a travel Food Network show called Vacation.
Yeah.
I think you just sold me an idea that I should be pitching.
And, of course. Yeah. You've got to pitch it, yeah.
Right. The next album, if the Civil War hops up, we could call it Altercation.
Ooh, beautiful. You've got a whole media franchise here.
Right.
Way to go.
As long as there's plenty of things that end with the word Cation.
Yeah, and I'm sure there will be. Yeah. Jackie Cation, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Staycation. It was such a pleasure. So much fun to talk to you.
Thanks so much.
Jackie Cation is a stand-up comedian originally from South Milwaukee. You can find out more about Jackie and her latest special, Staycation, at WPR.org/beta.
There was something that was more interesting about Larry's life than just him doing stand-up. And they were smart enough to give him an incredible amount of freedom to let him do the show the way he wanted to do it.
Journalist James Andrew Miller on Larry David's HBO series, Curb Your Enthusiasm. James joins us in just a moment to talk about how Home Box Office reinvented television. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.